What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome you back into a Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoftoff, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter, and with me as my regular co-host is Alan Medlock, a Medlock1 on Twitter and at the Red Bird Daily. And hey, we've got a trade to talk about. It's just not the trade that everybody would like to be talking about. We're recording this Friday night on the 1st of December, as we've turned into that last month, and the Cardinals, with the non-tender deadline staring them in the face, that was at 8 o'clock tonight, I believe, Central Time, make a deal with the Blue Jays to send Alamedes Diaz across the border for minor league outfielder J.B. Woodman. I believe that was his name. Alan, you look at this, it's a little bit surprising. Diaz has his four-year contract that they signed him when he was, coming out of Cuba had expired, which is why the non-tender was irrelevant for him. He needed a new contract for next year. He was still under team control, but, you know, they had to either tender him a contract or not and make him a free agent. Instead, they trade to get a little bit of value out of him, but it's a little bit surprising that they decided to cut ties with him, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. I think that this is probably one of those that it's probably more for the fact that they just needed the 40-man spot with some things moving forward. A combination of that, a combination of he really – last year was so bad that he moved down that depth chart. They don't have any room for him. You know, they've got plenty of other guys, even if he would have tried to dabble in the outfield, you know, like they had talked about, which it did seem like it was going to happen. To me, too, I think it was one of those where Toronto has, from the beginning of the offseason, had said that they were wanting to pick up another middle infielder that could play second and third, or second and short, maybe a little bit of third, that could honestly be like another starter. That he's going to play that much because they want to rest Devin Travis and they want to rest Tulowitzki. And I think this is a chance for him to regain his value and get a lot of playing time. And I think that that's probably how the organization probably sold it to him as well. Of, hey, we're moving you here. Thanks for your time. We think this is going to give you the better opportunity to play. So I think it's going to be a good situation for him. Probably make the big league club, probably get a lot of at-bats, and, you know the injury history of either one of those guys in Toronto, and he'll probably play quite a bit. So I think it's going to be a beneficial deal. A, helps the spot, like I said. You've got another, now you're at 38 players, so even if you sign a free agent, you have room to grab another. Or grab somebody else on your 40 man, and just sell him on the chance to play. You know, move him out of there, clear a little bit of waste, and I think that we may see several of those moves going forward. When you and I were messaging something that I haven't seen this as often, but I retweeted something because I didn't think it made any sense, and I was shocked by it. But Heyman tweeted that Waka had not been non-tendered. And that really surprised me. I was like, what? And so I retweeted it. I don't know if you saw it, but then it's been debunked since then. But those two moves, I was like, something big may really be happening if they're doing these kind of things. But yeah, just kind of an eventful evening, and I think that people are just jumping on any Cardinals news. And yeah, everybody's kind of waiting with bated breath on the big one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Waka being non-tendered, I did not see that. And, you know, like I said, you sent me a message, and it said it was a big move, and I saw the Demi Diaz. I was like, well, okay, I don't know if I'd have gone that far. But, Waka just, I mean, with as little pitching as they have, and we're talking about the Cardinals, and even though they're not, you know, interested in Lance Lynn, they really need to add some sort of starter. even with what they have. They're not just going to hand Michael Walker to the free agent market. They're not going to do that. I mean, Mark Walker, while he doesn't have the value he used to, would have some sort of value. I mean, we're not saying that he's going to be a starter next year for the Cardinals. Not likely he is, but if he's not, it's because he's gone in some sort of deal. They're not going to hand him off. As for Diaz, you look at that middle infield, either Paul DeJong's going to play short or they're going to go get a shortstop. So he's probably the guy. You've got Greg Garcia, who can back up second, short, third. You've got Valera, who can back it up. You've got Carpenter, who can play second and may do some of that, along with Colton Wong. There are a lot of middle infield guys. Now, there's a lot of middle infield guys that aren't that exciting either, but, Diaz, for all intents and purposes, was not all that exciting. I was talking with a guy from Toronto tonight after the trade, asking a little bit about the return, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but, kind of telling him, you don't know what you're going to get with Diaz, because you had those 6 weeks in 15 when he got, after he got DFA'd, that were really good. He had a great 16, but the rest of his career on both ends has been disappointing. If he can get his patience back, he's going to a new league, maybe he can catch something. And like you said, a lot of different time playing opportunities there with some guys that could get hurt, or some guys that may try to manage so they don't get hurt. There's some chances there. But on the whole, you don't know. And that's why, if they had tried to trade him last year, they'd have gotten a whole lot more than some, minor league outfielder that very well may not have ever amount to anything. But 17 was so detrimental to his numbers, and you couldn't, I know there's some injury issues and there's some other things, but couldn't really blame it all on that. And really what you could blame it on for the most part was a lack of plate discipline. And when that goes, you got to worry if it's going to come back.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good question. I wrote a piece on him last year, on Diaz last year, that I kind of thought he had turned the corner because he was so promising. And then when he signed with the organization, he just had a lot of, he set out basically for two whole seasons before he signed to play. Came in, immediately got hurt, never really didn't turn many heads until after he was designated and passed through waivers and brought back is when he kind of caught fire. And I thought, well, was that what woke him up, and is that's how his career is going to go? And I had high hopes for him. I had such high hopes that now I'm skeptical about DeJong, this year. I think that's a lot of the fan base feeling right now. Not to hang your hat on him too much, but I really thought the Diaz would ultimately come around and be a better player. This was a disappointing season for him. I thought what I always liked about him, he did play hard, he did hustle. I think that it's probably the best for both.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, as for Woodman, who comes back, he was rated, I think, the Blue Jays' 28th best prospect. Again, you have to worry, is that 28th best in a strong system or a weak system? I don't know the Blue Jays system that well. I was talking, like I said, to a Toronto blogger, a guy that I've known for a decade probably now, here and there, and a fairly well-respected one. He didn't have much to add. He didn't really know much about Woodman. I'm not sure. I don't know that he's a big minor guy, but I think that was kind of telling that, these kind of guys, like us, we know the top 10 guys. We know those guys that are coming up. We might know a little bit more. If there's a guy that we're not that familiar with, chances are there's not a lot of buzz about him. I talked to our resident expert, Kyle Reese, on there as well, and he kind of agreed with my assessment of organizational depth. with the possibility to be more. And I did have somebody on Twitter today, I believe. Let me look that up. It's Landshark Nation, I believe. This is Twitter handle. Yeah, Landshark Nation. A guy who has seen Woodman play a lot. Really watched him play in college. Feels like there's a lot of talent there. Still needs some time to develop. So maybe he's got a ceiling. It's just kind of funny. Again, we talk about how many outfielders the Cardinals have, and the one trade they make is to go get an outfielder.
Yeah, I thought that was strange as well. On that return, the entire time, whenever I saw the Diaz was the highlight of the first one that he had been traded, I was like, well, then that means it's not for, if it was Donaldson, the Donaldson would be the headliner. You know what I mean? So the return, I didn't pay that much attention to. I was like, well, this is a clear space and the clear having to pay him next year. And then I kind of looked, I was like, man, another outfielder though? Because I was thinking if they're going to go a depth piece, it's probably another pitcher of some sort. So that did surprise me. I mean, that list is getting, just like you and I have talked about all season, I mean, they're going to have to cut bait just due to numbers, on some of these guys.
And that may be part of why they brought him in, because they're going to wind up, packaging 2, 3, 4 of these guys in different deals. And somebody's got to play at Palm Beach. Somebody's got to play at Peoria. Somebody's got to play at Springfield. It may have been just their way of, again, it's really about clearing up a roster spot. We know that. I think that's pretty clear. But, in getting some value out of that. And it just, Diaz just didn't fit in the plans anymore. They'd gotten their 4 years out, and I think they just decided, they didn't really want to just dump him, but they, if they could get a little bit of value back, they did, then they would go with it. Interesting deal. Obviously not what we're looking for. It's like they kind of like put the wood on the hot stove, and, maybe start striking a match, but that really didn't light the hot stove fire like we've been hoping for. We continue to seemingly be in a holding pattern because of Giancarlo Stanton. And I know we've talked about Giancarlo Stanton every single show since the season ended. But it kind of finally feels like we're getting some movement. The Giants spoke to Stanton's representatives last night, which sent Cardinal Nation into major depression, because it felt like this was just a formality before a signing or for that trade. And then today the Cardinals got a chance to meet with Stanton and his representatives. In fact, I saw somebody indicated they thought Stanton might actually be there today where he wasn't with the Giants. I don't know if that's true. What we do know is Bill DeWitt and Mo and Gersh were the ones that talked with them. So, Alan, let's break this all down as much as we can, and let's talk about the fact, let's start with the fact that the Cardinals seem to be still in this race. For all the discussions we've had about, whether they would, whether they won't, you got a lot of people on Twitter saying this is just, public relations ploy, things like that. This really, as far as most national writers, it's down to the Giants and the Cardinals, and it's too close to call.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a little surprised. I think that we were so inundated with information of he's only going to play on the West Coast. He prefers the coast. He doesn't want anything to do with the Midwest. Well, then now maybe there may be a little thaw to that, and it may happen. I still, in the back of my mind the whole time, and I still, to be honest with you, Tiller, even right now, I think that it probably be there's some West Coast preference. I think that preference may be L.A., and that's no surprise to anybody else. And them not being involved, I got to think that the chances are that much better. Just like you and I talk about it, some of the other guys on Twitter. I would love to hear the sales pitch on both sides. Whenever I saw that Bochy was there yesterday, I got a little nervous. I was thinking, I have a lot of respect for the way that they run the organization, and definitely Bochy. And I was thinking, that's the one guy that could come in and say, hey, look, we've done it this way. This is what happened to our ball club last year. Baumgartner will be back full season. Wade will be back full season. You're going to strengthen and lengthen the lineup. We still have Posey. know, this is just what we need. We're last in the league in home runs. You immediately make a big difference on that. How that sales pitch would be interesting. It seems like there's a glimmer of hope in St. Louis, though. I don't know why, and you and I know that you and I were kind of talking the last couple of days about it. Just seems like the tone has changed to it's almost more serious now, and a lot of the reports that are coming out, the reporters that are doing it are also the ones that are on the ground, and they've been more so correct than what we were hearing. It seemed like the Cardinals in this chase would have a good day, bad day, good day, bad day, and it was just due to what information was coming out. And there was just nothing solidified. It seems like things are now, I think there's still a lot of smoke involved, but all things are pointing to a finish. And it seems like they're right in the middle of it. I hope that if this doesn't happen, I hope it's a situation where it's something that he wanted to do to stay on the coast. I would even accept that, hey, I just didn't want to play in the Midwest. I mean, I read a great quote. Respects it as a baseball town, just didn't want to live there. Mm-hmm. We know that's kind of ridiculous because they only live here a certain amount of the season and they have the money to do whatever they want. But I don't want it to hear that the Giants offered the package that they did and were willing to pay the $270. I've heard $250, but $270 to get the deal done when the Cardinals will only pay $265 and give away this. I mean, if they want him, they need to get him. And I don't think the money is as big as an issue as it's being made out. I also don't keep their books, but I just don't want it to find out that they got under that they just drew the line in the sand and got beaten. It was due to, you know, $5 to $10 million, and you're already having $300 go out the window. That's what I hope doesn't happen. So, but it seems like they're in this to the end though, which tells me there's some flexibility and they're definitely. I thought Craig Mish's report yesterday was good. He said, hey, I can tell you this. He said, don't be disappointed if they don't get him because it's not due to their lack of trying. And that says a lot to me. I mean, there's no consolation prize, but I was afraid that they were getting priced out, and we kind of know that their hesitancy on these $200 million contracts, and I really thought that'd be the case. And I was just afraid Twitter would blow up if that were to happen.
Yeah, and I think it would. I mean, agree. I think that will. I think it can or will. And, you know, if the Giants take on all the money and they, you know, give up no prospects, basically, and depending until the stories come out and we find out what's going on behind the scenes, there are going to be a lot of people that say the Cardinals didn't do enough. There's a lot of blame pointing right now on Twitter. Okay. I mean, even though there's nothing going on, you know, the Cardinals are still in this, but there's still already a lot of people saying, well, they're not, you know, they didn't want to do enough. You know, again, we're down to this. We've been doing this for quite some time. And yes, the Marlins could be, you know, stringing them along, trying to, you know, but I think that Mo and company have done this enough. They'd know if they were had a serious shot at this or not by this point. But also, you know, the fact that they're still there, I think you're seeing the Cardinals have at least have had to have said, okay, we'll take on, you know, X amount of money. And it may not be the same amount as the Giants, but it's really, really close. Enough that the prospects will make up the difference. Because from all that we can hear, if there was no trade clause, there was no trade clause, if to use a double negative, I guess. If Stanton did not have a no trade clause, he would be a Cardinal. I don't have any doubt about that. I think the Marlins, if they had the choice, would take the Cardinals package, and they would have probably already done it by now. But they gave him a no trade clause, and so obviously he has the right to, you know, invoke that, and that's his right, and you can't really blame him for that. And so this is less a trade, as we talked about before the show. It's less a trade than a free agent bidding. Which is going to scare people because then everybody says, well, they're going to come in second again. Well, they may. I don't know, but it's a little bit different. But it's still got some of the hallmarks because like you said, the Giants representatives got to go yesterday and make their case. The Cardinals representatives go today, make their case. It will be interesting to see if anybody else goes in the next day or two, or maybe beginning of next week. You know, will Boston send anybody? Will the Dodgers? You know, if we don't hear anything about that pretty soon, then, you know, the Dodgers probably don't have to, just because it's pretty clear that he would be, but they also don't seem to be in it. You know, if Boston doesn't send anybody down there, then we can, you know, kind of really assume it's down to these two teams. And, you know, if it's down to the Cardinals and Giants, or staying in Miami, which it really feels like he's probably... it's getting difficult, more difficult by the day for him to return to Miami, I think. If it comes down to the Giants and the Cardinals, and, I mean, you know, one, you know, your sales tax, your income tax is different. Although, from what I understand in Giancarlo's contract, which I don't think is in everybody's, but I've seen Derek Gould talk about it, it must be in his, where he gets the difference paid to him. You know, a lot of times if they get traded from Florida, which has no state income tax, to California, which takes like half your money, I think, or something like that. I don't know what their tax rate is, but it's high. It's really high. You know, usually the player just is out the difference. But at least I think they are. I may be wrong. But at least in the Stanton's case, the difference will be paid by the team. So if he was, you know, if he's got $15 million of tax going to Florida, to going to California, the Giants are out the $275 or the $295 on the deal, plus another $15 for that taxes. So at least he'd be paying a little bit less in Missouri. And, you know, again, you and I were talking about this beforehand. The Cardinals feel like, and we've had these discussions, and there are still some holes for sure, but the Cardinals really feel like they're much closer to contending and have the history of contending more than the Giants are right now.
Yeah, that's it's amazing to me, and I understand the circumstances on that. You know, I mean, your ace is out for, you know, 3 months, and that happens, but, you know, 30 wins would put them at 94, right in the middle of the division, and you kind of pointed out, well, you may not have to shoot for the division, and it could be a wild card, but that's still, you know, 20 to 25 wins. That is possible with all those guys coming back. I think that you were right on the, you know, he's automatically going to add to their low home run total, and that's the point. I have a really good friend of mine who's a huge Giants fan, really has a finger on the pulse too, and I've kept in touch with him throughout the deal just to kind of see how valid it seems, and he's kind of like we are, to where it's, you almost don't want to wish so hard because it probably wouldn't happen. But he was telling me some interesting stuff. The Giants have to fill that ballpark up to have any kind of payroll at all. And he said what they're mostly afraid of is losing people in those seats. He said because if that were the case, that's going to, they wouldn't, their income payroll would just bottom out. They didn't have anybody coming, so they have to fill those seats up. And I think there's a lot of I don't know how to word it, but it's kind of the same thing that St. Louis is going through. You know, we've seen a little bit of decreased numbers, but I think that as Cards fans, we're worried that may happen in bulk soon if they miss the playoffs again. I think San Francisco is worried about having something similar. They know they're going to be improved just by what they have. They feel like they've got to greatly improve to fill those seats, because now they're going to start eating themselves if they don't bring somebody in. Now, I thought that was an interesting take. That's why they're almost willing to take the money, because they know they have to do something, because they can't lose the game-to-game fan base that they have in order to pull these things off. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Yeah, when I look at it and you're thinking, well, that makes a lot of sense and they need those turnstiles moving, I don't know if it still can make 20 wins to get them in. So, I don't know. It just didn't seem like the right fit to me, but that may be me looking through rose-colored glasses as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a need there. But it feels like, yeah, I mean, Stanton, obviously adds to that. They're still going to be on the low end of the home run totals, even with him. It does, you know, obviously it does increase the people showing up. You're right in that regard. And maybe that's worth it for them. But, you know, Cueto's getting older. You know, yeah, Bumgarner's obviously still Bumgarner, but, you know, is there enough there to put some sort of magic together? Yeah, I don't know. And I guess it really depends on what he thinks as well, and how much he wants to be involved with the team and culture and stuff like that of, you know, of baseball. Now, do you find any interesting or any read-in in anything into the fact that, as you pointed out, Bochy went with both their GM and their baseball operations president, which is, you know, Saban and, what, Evans, is that right?
Yeah,
their GM?
Yeah, it was Bobby Evans.
Yeah. Whereas the Cardinals sent the owner and then their two guys. They did not... I mean, one, they sent their owner, which the Giants did not. But they did not send their manager, which the Giants did. Does that mean anything to you? I mean, I know that there's a faction in the Cardinal fan base that are like, well, they wouldn't want to send Matheny, you know, don't want him to run him off or whatever, because they don't want to play for Matheny. You know, I don't really think that's the case. I mean, the guy's going to have to deal with Matheny one way or another if he comes. But it was, you know, does sending the owner, the guy that writes the checks, the guy that, I mean, you know, got to figure Stanton's not exactly high on those kind of guys right now, having Loria and now Jeter, you know, as the, at least Jeter's the face of that ownership group, and the way they have run things at Miami. Do you think maybe they sent, you know, maybe DeWitt went to tell him, look, that's not the way we do business in St. Louis?
You know, that's an interesting angle. I didn't even think about that. I thought they took the big guns. That's the way that I look at it. And I didn't even think about the angle out of the out of Miami. That's a good pickup. Because you're right. I mean, Loria was probably his best friend for a little while because he's writing the heftiest checks ever. You know, Jeter's probably, I don't know, the spotlight's on him right now. So, and there's an element to me, and this could take this in a completely different direction. He was so perfect as a player, as a winning player, that I think people are looking for flaws on the way that he's handling this. And then there's enough stories to kind of say that it's true. But that, it makes a great point that DeWitt was there. It was like, hey, that's not how this organization's, that's not how we run it. This is our history. That's pretty exciting. I was glad to see that those three went. It was funny. There was a part of me that wondered if Gersh was going to go. And when the trade actually happened before we got the validation that those three were the ones that went, I thought that Gersh probably did not go, that he was probably working back here. But you're right. He is going to be the face before too long, and we never know. He and Evans may be the ones with the relationship. You know, that may be the situation in Saban and Mozeliak. So that, you know, and I'm not saying that it's not like they were meeting or whatnot, but that could be how these things play out. Like, I guess it would be maybe Hill and Gersh have the relationship, you know, and I'm just throwing stuff now. Just, you know,
right.
But yeah, I really thought that they took the A-team down there. I tell myself that I was impartial on whether Matheny went or not, but I was excited to see that he didn't. And I don't know what that says about, you know, I'm not a Matheny hater like some of the fan base is. But, you know, I was kind of glad to see that he didn't go. And I don't know necessarily what that means, but I was kind of glad to see that those were the two went. And your angle on DeWitt makes a ton of sense.
Well, and if you want to be conspiracy theory on it, which I don't really, but it would be, I mean, I'm sure some would, you know, maybe they're saying, look, Bill DeWitt's going to be around for a long time. John Mozeliak's going to be around for a long time. We don't know about this Mike Matheny guy. You know, I mean, a bad year this year. And, you know, I guess if you're trying to sell a guy on stability you bring the guys that you know are going to be around. And not, like I said, not to say that Mike Matheny's not. I mean, getting Stanton is much more likely to keep Mike Matheny's job, I would think, because it's more likely you're going to get to the postseason, which means it's more likely that he's going to be around for 19 and 20 on that contract. But, you know, maybe that's part of it. And, again, though, I just... Maybe we read too much into it. Maybe it was just the fact that they took Bill DeWitt so that if, you know, something came up with, you know, if Stanton asked for, hey, I want $10 million to buy this no trade clause out, they didn't have to, you know, get on the phone with Bill. They could just, you know, he was there. And he could say, yeah, we can do that. Or let's maybe five, you know, or something like that. You know, I don't know. But it is interesting to just kind of... I mean, that's all we can do is speculate. I mean, given... You know, and I think you were talking about earlier about how there's more substantive news. I think that's just because there's stuff that's happening that's not behind closed doors now. We know that, you know, we can see these people going. We know that they met with them. We know that, you know, that has to mean... that the Marlins have let them talk to them, which means that they have to at least have some sort of, you know, they got to feel like they're close with both of those teams. That if Stanton says, hey, I'll go to whoever, then they could get the deal done. Or he says, I'll go to here, I won't go here, then they'll say, okay, let's, you know, finalize the deal. And I think if they're smart, you know, they've got that deal kind of locked down already. Because, you know, once you find out, you know, what if John Mozeliak finds out that Stanton will go to St. Louis, but he won't go to San Francisco? What do you think that offer is? That offer gets a lot more favorable for St. Louis all of a sudden, you know. So I'm sure that there's some sort of framework that both sides have agreed to that says if he will go, you know, these guys are part of this deal. You know, maybe we'll negotiate around the edges. So that may be. It may be just, you know, as easy as him coming in Monday morning and telling Mike Hill, I'll go to St. Louis, or I'll go to San Francisco, or I'll go both places. And we could see a deal, you know, by Tuesday or Wednesday. Now, it may not be that easy, but it feels like both sides have to be pretty close to be getting to this point where they're actually discussing things with Stanton.
Yeah, I would think so. The sky was definitely falling yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Meeting with the Giants, and you thought, well, West Coast, Giants, this is probably going to happen. Yeah, it shouldn't sound so bad. You know what I mean? It's kind of one of those things you got to do. So, well, then when it happened today, I was like, oh, okay, now it makes sense. But Joe Fusaro yesterday posted, he said, now the courting period begins. And I was like, man, this process is going to play out. Because that means now we know that those two teams have spoken to him. I hope there's not another team. But there may very well be. And kind of figure out how this is going to all play out. So we're hoping for a conclusion one way or the other. Hoping for the best. But maybe just want it to be over. It doesn't sound like that's going to happen. But you're exactly right. I think if these teams are invited to meet with the representation, which has to be approved by Florida or Miami, some guidelines have definitely had to have been agreed upon.
Yeah, yeah. It has to be. In fact, Derek Gould put up a story earlier that, I mean, even by baseball rules, there has to be at least some sort of framework for them to be allowed to talk to Stanton. So, again, I think this is the most optimistic we've seen, that there's going to be some resolution soon. And again, we're not saying that it's going to be a Cardinal. Ask me tomorrow. Well, I'll tell you the percentages as they'll change. Yeah. But, absolutely. I mean, earlier in the week, it felt like, hey, this is going to get done. And then it was, man, you know, San Francisco's going to get in this. And then, you know, he wants to go to L.A. What if they get into this? And, you know, like you said last night, it was just terrible. And then today, it's great. And I know, I feel better. I still think it's a close, but I think there's a strong possibility that they'll get this done. And it feels like that's really their focus right now. I mean, I'm sure they've got other things going that they can pivot to if necessary, but it really feels like this is what they're pushing for. And fair enough. I mean, even if it doesn't work, as long as he stays healthy, which is, you know, that's for everybody to some degree, then he's gonna. It's going to be more interesting to watch the Cardinals next year, no matter what the results are. We may want them to win more than they do, but given a choice between watching a team that's, you know, plodding along under 500 like they were this year, or a team that's plodding along under 500 but is hitting home runs and, you know, has that electric moment of whenever Stanton's up to the plate, I think we'd take the latter. I mean, obviously, that's not, neither one are great choices, but the biggest problem with this year's team, well, one of the biggest problems with this year's team, is that there was no excitement to them. It was blah. It was boring at times. And no matter what happens, a team with Giancarlo Stanton will not be boring.
Nope. I mean, it's the marquee player, which they've been missing since, you know, since the heyday of, what, maybe people will argue it was Pujols. Mm-hmm. I still think it was the heyday of 2013 of Holiday. I mean, they've been missing that piece. And, you know, unfortunately, just like we were talking about with Tavares, that was the next guy in line. They've been missing it since then. And this would get those turnstiles moving, and I still think even if you know, he stays healthy, they're going to contend.
Yeah, I think Holiday was a huge part of this team, a vital backbone to this team, but he wasn't the guy that you stopped to watch. You know what I'm saying?
No. Yeah.
I mean, he was definitely very good, and he won him a lot of games, and I don't disparage him at all, but he was just—he was kind of a quiet guy that put up the stuff. And I mean, you look at the end of the year, and he's got 30 home runs or whatever it may be. You know, obviously, you stopped to watch Pujols. So obviously, you stopped to watch McGuire. And those are the guys that have star power. The guys that transcended St. Louis. I think that's the biggest thing. Matt Holliday was big in St. Louis. He made some All-Star games, but I don't know that he was. You know, he's never a national stage kind of guy, I don't think. Stanton would be that. Stanton would be, you know, get Giancarlo Stanton and you're going to be on ESPN even more than they were last year, which...
Well, and that's just like you and I had talked about, and I've said this before. 59 home runs as a Cardinal, that would have been front page news. Mm-hmm. It was a back burner deal with Miami. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's it just was. I mean, it wasn't on the forefront of anything. Where that wouldn't have been the case in St. Louis. I mean, he would be revered for those things here.
Yeah, and I mean, just choosing St. Louis. I mean, right now he can choose St. Louis, which is a great option for him. I mean, he can be immediately beloved in St. Louis. That is, I mean. Some people are going to probably complain about what they gave up or whatever, but I think everybody's going to be very excited to have him here. And I think most people are going to realize that he's only here for 3 years.
Yeah.
At the most.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also want to say, and, you know, we may only want him here for 3 years, but that's a different story. And I've said this a couple times, I don't know where I know, on Twitter, and maybe I wrote it on a post. I would imagine that the day they told Mark McGuire, hey, you're going to St. Louis from Oakland, he did not expect to be there much more than, you know, 2 months. He said, I'm going to go to St. Louis, and I'm going to be a free agent, and I'm going somewhere else. This is a stopover. And, you know, for all the corniness and all that stuff, fans want him over. He came into St. Louis. You know, he's talked about that first at bat where he just gets a standing ovation and he hadn't even done anything yet. He gets a standing ovation. I think he struck out maybe his first at bat and he got a standing ovation when he left. You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, and he just knew that was a place he wanted to be. Yeah, I'm not saying that's going to happen with Stanton. I'm just saying he may not think that he's going to be here for a long period of time and he may fall in love with the place. Maybe he won't. Who knows? But it's at least a possibility. But anyway, even if you only have him for 3 years, You know, if it, and he exercises the opt-out and he goes somewhere else and you tip your cap and you say thanks for coming. Because I think that 3 years, again, knock on wood, assuming he's healthy, all that kind of stuff, it could be 3 very exciting years.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's, and I take that to where, you know, in 3 years if this happens, you'll hear me complaining, but you almost want him, you know, you mm-hmm. may, I want him to opt out in three seasons, but, you know, I hope we get to that point where we can complain about it.
That's
my deal. I mean, that's, and I hate to say it because I've kind of playing both sides of the fence on this, in the fact that if it doesn't happen, it may be for the best that it didn't happen. I'm worried about backlash if it fails to happen. I still think they're going to get somebody. I think the only way that it fails this offseason is if they don't get a key bat. But I do appreciate how they're pushing their cards on the table.
I agree. And, I mean, you're right. A lot of people have said this. You know, Stanton is a possibility, a solution for this time. He's not the only thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know we would, I don't think, that's the problem with this, and for the biggest problem with this dragging out is that anything else feels secondhand. But if you could make a deal, and I don't know that you can, but, you know, because obviously the, you know, we've heard a lot of reports of the Rays and the Cardinals talking about Colome, especially. I think Odrozzi's been in there. But what if you could get an Archer, Longoria, Colome for who knows what? Contract, money, whatever. Just assume you could get those three. And that may be asking a lot, but it's still within the realm of possibility. If you could get those three, you know, you could be a much better team than you were last year. But still, there's going to be this people that aren't excited about those guys because they're not Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we've said that from the early, early beginnings of the offseason, of how that would be one trade that I feel like you could make and you improve all the way around, but I'm not sure that that's what they're looking for. I think they're looking for a star. And yeah. Longoria at 32, I don't think this is the star anymore. And where I think Archer could be, Archer and Martinez could really light it up. It just goes to show you what power does. You know what I mean? And offense does. I think they do need someone that they can still build towards.
Yeah, because they have built this team around pitching for quite some time. And been very successful at it. Don't get me wrong. And I love pitching. I am perfectly fine with them, you know, getting, making that kind of move and improving, you know, defense and pitching all at the same time. But it feels like the name of the game right now is needing some more power. You need something. You need that bat. This team feels like it really needs that. And you could go that other route and maybe be very successful, but it's not going to, I mean, there's enough people that are going to have to say, you know, let me see this. I don't know that this is going to be any different than what we've seen in the past. Whereas Stanton coming in, for better or worse, is significantly different than what we've had.
Yeah. It's one of those where even I feel like it's almost, I'm so superstitious anyway, but just the amount of time that we put on it, I'm just like, we've almost built ourselves up for great disappointment, you know, if it weren't to happen. But
sure.
You're exactly right. I mean, I've said this from the beginning. The stars align for Stanton. I just hope that he makes the decision fall through with it, because, I mean, he's the anchor in that lineup. He's the guy on the billboards that they need. It's, you know, everything lines up for him perfectly. It's just got so cloudy.
Yeah.
You know, within the situations to get in. But yeah, you're right. I mean, he checks off all the boxes. Dave, Colin Garner put something really, he told me something really interesting. I was kind of in the, I would hate to see Reyes go. And ultimately, I think the injury may help them out because you're selling low. But I was like, you know, Reyes going for the steal. I'm just not super comfortable with it because I think you may have a guy that could challenge your Scherzers and something down the line. I think he's that elite. But Colin said something that really kind of shut me up. He said, this is an organization that has shown they can develop pitching. It may not be at that level, but they're going to have star pitching. To give up one of those to get a Giancarlo Stanton. And it makes complete sense. You know, I was like, you know, and I hold Reyes in high regard, but if I'm willing to move that, that shows that I think that shows what all Cardinals fans think of Stanton is. This is, you know, he's on a pedestal, and that's what they need.
And there's definitely some of that. I will say every report we've heard so far is that Reyes is not in the deal. Sandy Alcantara is the only name we've heard, and we have heard some of the reporters, I don't know if it was Spencer or Mish, who's been involved in reporting this, say Reyes was not in the deal, at least as they know it, you know, whatever that is. But yeah, I think you're right. I don't want to sell him. I wouldn't want to trade Reyes right now, especially given coming off Tommy John. But you know, somebody, I don't remember which show it was. It may have been Colin on Prospect to Be Named Later, but it might have been Adam and Rusty on Bird Law, talking about, we don't know that Reyes is going to be what Reyes would have been. He may never develop back to what we think he was going to be, and so maybe you sell him now while he still has a reputation. I don't know. But anyway.
Interesting time leading up to winter meetings.
Yeah.
That's going to be a day-to-day deal.
Very much. All right, well, let's go ahead. I think we've looked at enough of this. You know, if Stanton gets traded in the next 15 to 20 minutes, then we'll let you know. But probably not likely to do that. So let's go ahead and hit a few more of our favorite players as we continue to work our way through this list. And if you haven't been listening, and I don't know why you would pick it up right now, but you know, just on the off chance this is the first show you've listened to, back in the right as the season ended, Alan and I asked you to put down your favorite Cardinal players. We in an order, and we gave them points, and we've been working through this for the last 5 or 6 shows now. You can find a list of the players that we have already talked about. It's pinned to our Twitter feed at MeMeUsual, at MeMeUsual. Pretty easy to find. You'll find the list there, and I'll update with the people we talk about here probably Monday or Tuesday. So you know, you get that little bit of bonus for actually listening to us instead of me putting them up automatically. We've gone through 125 players already. We have about looks like 64 left to go. Not going to do them all tonight, obviously, but we're going to do a few of them. We're up to the people that have gotten, our first one has received 30 points. That's where we're going to start tonight. And that guy is Reggie Sanders, who we heard a lot about this year, you know, because he was the last guy before Tommy Pham to hit 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases. Alan, any thoughts on Reggie Sanders?
I love this Cardinal. He's the typical guy that you love when he's on your team, but hated him when he was with anybody else. Because whenever he was with Cincinnati, I couldn't stand him. I can't remember the situation. He almost got into, there was almost a brawl in an early, mid-90s Cardinals-Reds game. I can't remember who it was, and he always kind of came off as just kind of jerky. Then when he was in St. Louis, you kind of found out that he was actually a very intelligent dude, you know, impersonable guy, which kind of surprised me. Great player for the Cards, I thought. This year, you know, prototypical, you know, right fielder, good player, winning teams. I'm kind of I didn't realize that I knew that Tekel Fly was good. I didn't realize he was 37 year old doing it.
Yeah, he did come to the Cardinals a little bit later in his career. Part of me still remembers, what was it? I guess it was 95 when he was at the Reds. You know, he had a great year, but he went to the playoffs that year, and I think he struck out like every single time he was a bat. And for some reason, that stuck with me. Yeah, he had 18 plate appearances in the NLCS that year against the Braves, and struck out in 10 of them. And that just kind of stuck with me, I think, because I was watching the playoffs that year, and it just kind of stuck. But, you know, he played pretty well for the Cardinals. He got, you know, obviously got to the World Series in 04, the NLCS in 05 with the Cardinals. Like I said, 2020 player. Obviously, you know, you know that big smile. Solid quality player. Played 2 years in with the Royals after he left St. Louis, and didn't quite ever get back to that what he was with the Cardinals. But you look at that. Yeah, you're right. That 05 hit 21 home runs, and he did it in 93 games.
I didn't realize that he was. I knew that he was later in his career. I didn't realize he was 37 years old.
Yeah,
that's what surprised me when I looked at it. I was like, wow. So. Yeah. You know, he was one of those, they always talked about he was just in fantastic shape. That he really took care of himself. And if you remember, toward the end of his career, there was a lot of talk of he would be one of the guys that they thought would be a pretty decent manager.
Mm-hmm.
And, I always wondered, because I think he got into some sort of management afterwards, and I don't think he's affiliated with any baseball now at all, or at least big league baseball. But, yeah, I knew that he was held in high regard, and I didn't know that if it was.
Let's see, Reggie Sanders, who is following me for some reason. I don't know. I'm following him, but he was following me. I just figured he was like Jose Bautista and had like a million people that he followed, but not so much. But anyway, looks like he's a special assistant to the Royals right now. So he's still with their organization. So that was kind of interesting. So, yeah, good player. Kind of glad that he made it through. I mean, he's one of those guys, and we see more of it nowadays, especially over the last, 20, 25 years, probably, especially. Guy, played, a lot of his career with Cincinnati, but then after that, I just, had a vagabond existence to some degree. Went to the Padres for a year, the Braves for a year, the Diamondbacks for a year, the Giants for a year, the Pittsburgh for a year. And then he came to St. Louis, and that was the first time he spent anywhere. Spent 2 years in St. Louis and 2 years with the Royals. That's a little extreme. You don't see him bounce around that much, especially a guy that, was hitting 20 to 30 home runs.
That's the thing. Is he really, I'm on Baseball Reference as well right now. I mean, just like you are, but he really didn't have a bad season. The 2000 in Atlanta seems to stick out, but he only played 100 games. So it seems like, I don't remember too much about that, but it may have been obviously injury related. He hit 30 plus home runs on a World Series team, in 2001 with Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Good player.
Yep, and most of that stuff was free agency. I mean, the Reds traded him at the beginning of '99 to the Padres. At the end of the '99, Padres traded him to the Braves. But after that, every year he just basically signed a 1 year deal for a lot of those places. And some of that, I think you're right. I think some of that had to do with injury, him trying to make good, especially, nice. Yeah, but, not all of it. I don't know. It's interesting, but yeah, good general career, and I shouldn't have shut that tab down. Okay. Next up is, with 32 points, Orlando Cepeda. Now, obviously Cepeda before our time, but you can't help but know the story of Cepeda, if nothing else, because they talk to him every time they go to San Francisco. And Tim McCarver gets a chance to catch up with his old buddy Cepeda, and some good baseball stories come out of it. I mean, you know, only played in St. Louis for 3 years, but was obviously a huge addition. Won the MVP in 67 with the Cardinals. Was the one that coined the name Albertos, which obviously we know via the blog name more than anything nowadays. But, you know, that's a phrase that's associated there with those 60s teams that a lot of people that watched that team, and you're talking about, you know, people that we know on Twitter, I'm pretty sure, Texas Card Fan 1, I think, you know, Bob Netherton, and people like that, maybe some of their earliest teams that they knew of, you know, it brings back a lot of great memories and a lot of great players that were on those teams. So, but Cepeda seemed to be one that kind of, you know, just kind of kicked them into gear, and, you know, they won. They came back, won that 67, and then, you know, back in the World Series in 68, in part because of him. And if I'm right, it's the story of him leaving St. Louis is one of my favorite Bob Gibson stories, because the general manager at the time, I think, I don't remember who it was, came to Gibson and said, "We have a chance to get Joe Torre. What do you think?" And Gibson says, "Yeah, if you get Torre, you should get Torre." So they trade Torre. It trades Cepeda for Torre. And Gibson then, you know, like, you know, after the deal, comes up to the general manager and it says, "Don't you get Torre? I didn't tell you to trade Cepeda for him." You know, and while it worked out for obviously for the Cardinals, and it all right for the Braves, I think as well. And I don't know, that story has always stuck with me. But yeah, interesting. It's one of those ones that you hear that name a lot when you start diving into especially that era of Cardinal history.
Yeah, and it's some of those, it's where I feel like on the list we don't do justice. You know, just and not necessarily you but me for not not knowing any more than it was.
Right. All right, we got a number of people that tied with 33 points. One that makes a lot of sense, or is very appropriate, let's put it that way, but we'll get to that in a minute. 33s are Dexter Fowler, Randall Grichuk, Al Hrabowski, Julian Javier, Daryl Porter, Andy Van Slyke, and Larry Walker. Where do you want to start? Yeah, Porter's just a smidgen before my time, you know, because I came around, I really started following 87, you know, some 85, and, you know, he's obviously made his mark in 82 or a little earlier on, plus his time before he came to St. Louis. But, yeah, I think he's a guy that you don't hear a lot about, and obviously had some huge impacts. Yeah.
I think that he's very high on the Whitey's list of players, and he felt like that both turnarounds in both cities having guys like Porter on the ball club.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, you can kind of pull up his numbers. You know, he had some good years. A lot of us, you know, beginning of years in Milwaukee, but you're right, came into his own in Kansas City. Never was an all-star in St. Louis, but there's no doubt, you know, that 80, even though he was hitting, you know, 231 in 82, I've heard enough about his defense to know that he was still a huge leader of that team. You know, obviously he had his off-the-field issues and that. I mean, he was the MVP of the 82 World Series. Don't want to forget that. And MVP of the NLCS as well. He may be one of the few Cardinals that's done that. I know David Freese did it. But to do an NLCS MVP and a World Series MVP at the same year is not an easy thing to do. But, yeah, anyway, he had his off-the-field issues that led to his – I think it led to his death eventually. He, you know, died very young at 50. And unfortunately, that's some of those issues that were prevalent at that time with a lot of players. But yeah, I think that he's a guy that could have gotten a lot more recognition. Might have now. It seems like the Cardinals are doing a better job in the last, you know, since DeWitt's came along, especially of really recognizing those players and bringing some of those players back in history. Now, Porter could have been one of those guys, perhaps, if he was still around.
Yeah, you would think that he probably would be, especially as, you know, a lot of the Whitey Ball era guys are held in high regard. And, you know, those things thaw out. You know, I'm sure that, as you can tell, the Keith Hernandez deal, you see him prevalent around the market. You know, I understand that he works for the Mets and everything, and that's him being brought up on the ballot for Cardinals Hall of Fame. Those things are probably going to start happening. So you just wonder, it's kind of posthumously that may be something that happens. You know, kind of just a sad deal. I remember when he passed away, you know, and all that. Just a sad situation, but I don't think he may get the credit out of St. Louis that he does. I mean, he would, you know, if you hear catchers that don't get the notoriety they deserve, of course you're going to hear Simmons first. I think Porter may be in that vein, not necessarily, you know, in the Hall of Fame, but is Cardinals, in their Cardinals career, I think that may be something after Simmons ultimately gets selected in the Hall of Fame. You know, that it may be that's brought up in the ballot.
That's a possibility, I guess. I don't, you know, it's very possible he'll show up there some, although I don't remember their qualifications.
Yeah, I'm not real sure either, and that may just be wishful thinking on my part. And, yeah. You know, basically, an uneducated guess.
Well, and he was here for 5 years, so I think that's probably good enough. I mean, McGuire was here for, 98, 99, 2000, part of 01, part of 97, so he wasn't here any longer. I mean, he was here less time than Fowler, or Porter, so length of time should not disqualify him. So maybe so. We got Al on here. You know, obviously, most of us know Al from broadcasting. I know some people have obviously got a chance to watch him as a pitcher. I never did, obviously. You know, and it's a little interesting to see him this high up because, you know, if you factor in his broadcasting, Al's not always the most popular guy, at least not when we're talking, not on the Twitters.
Oh, definitely not. I mean, that's, I asked that question last year. I said, what are your guys' honest opinions of the broadcasting? Because I was always one that I always liked, but that was the only ones that I would hear. You know, now it's more widely accepted to not necessarily like some of the announcers because you hear every other team announcers at some point. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not so certain he doesn't deserve a lot of the flack that he gets, but you know, as a player, I know that my dad loved Bobrovsky as a player. You know, just because that was my dad's just type of person and personality to go out. Kind of, he was a Klein fan as well. That tells you anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's it. But you're right. I mean, I didn't think about it after I wrote his name down, but I was like, yeah, that is pretty high, considering we've had a lot of players that were definitely more revered than Bobrovsky that made it that high. And you would think that he would actually decrease in popularity, you know, as much negativity as you hear about it.
And some of that's just a factor of, I mean, Al got a 4th place vote, a 7th place vote, and 2 10th place votes. So it wasn't like he got a whole lot of support across the board. We're still in that range of people that, you know, they're getting more than 1 or 2 votes. But, and I should have pointed out, I think that I didn't last, in the last one, Orlando Cepeda did get a 1st place vote. And then in this group, Hughley and Javier and Andy Vitzlight got one. But, you know, we're still in that point where a couple of votes can push you kind of far up this list. I mean, you know, I look at this and he got 33 points, which is, you know, like I said, in the 60s. But then, you know, you look at the top, you know, the top ones are, you know, over 1,000. So it's still quite a little bit of a ways, a distance. Al's the, I don't know. I do think sometimes he gets more grief than he needs to from his broadcasting. I will say the time that I got a chance to meet him a few years back and talk to him could not have been any nicer to us, even though he knew we were bloggers and stuff of that nature. But, you know, he does say some stuff that, you know, is a little bit outdated, I think, to some degree. And, you know, I think that's somewhat from the era that he played, and, you know, he's just kind of still in that mindset. I was listening to, and that happens, and that's what I'm saying is I was listening to the most recent Best Podcast of Baseball where Derek Golden and Rick Hummel are talking, and you listen to Rick Hummel, and you hear him talk a lot about RBI, and you hear him talking a lot about, you know, been on the winning team, and I mean his MVP ballot was so much different than Derek Gould's because of, you know, he's just got a different mindset, and that's, and I'm not saying it's wrong.
Exactly. I agree.
Yeah, it's just it's different than what we know now. It's different. It's not as statistically informed. You know, I don't know. Sometimes I think we go too far away from the old stuff, but I think that's what some of Al is he's just, you know, he's got that player mentality and that player of the 70s mentality versus a player of today's mentality. And we hear him all the time. And you know, anybody, I mean, that's when you watch this team all the time, you're going to hear the same stories and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, and, you know, back to the voting a little bit. That makes a lot of sense. And I know this can get us, we're running late. But I think that there's always that dividing line now with I'd love to bridge that gap. You know, you and I have talked about that a little bit. But that may be some of the negativity that gets brought on him because everybody thinks that it's outdated. And a large majority of the viewing audience now is analytically driven. So that may be that's a good point you hit on. I didn't really think about that.
Andy Van Slyke, we've talked a little bit about him already with when we talked about Mike LaValliere.
Yep.
And Tony Pena. It's like was a good one, and we still see him. You know, we saw Suns come third with the Dodgers. We saw him. He was, I think, on the Tiger staff when the Cardinals were playing them a lot in interleague play. Good player, enjoyable thing. And then Larry Walker, you know, for a guy that only played what, you know, a year and a month with the Cardinals. Walker really got a devoted fan base behind him, and fair enough. My wife always called him Mr. Angry Eyes, because he, you know, he came over soon, not terribly long after we'd been married for a while, and she'd be watching like, "Who's the guy with the angry eyes?" And, never really thought that, but
it's funny,
you know, so she'll still occasionally ask me about that, even though he's been retired for, you know, a decade now.
Yeah.
But and it's interesting. I mean, he's up for the Hall of Fame vote, and there's a lot of people that are very much on that bandwagon, and you know, obviously not for his time in St. Louis, but more of his time with the Expos and the Rockies. But you know, still remember, you know, great bat and what an arm out in the outfield.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people that say that he is, just because he wasn't so flashy, he doesn't get the notoriety for it, but he was one of the best outfielders they'd ever seen. You know, I'm going to switch over 7-time, but I'm just going to say 8, but he's 7-time Gold Glover. And, you know, there's a lot of people that hold him in high regard. I think he needs to get more acknowledgement from the Hall of Fame. I definitely feel that way. But he's also one of those guys, too, that I think is going to be cursed by Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the voters have not figured out yet. And, I mean, obviously we're just now getting into that range because the Rockies have been around for, well, it'll be 25 years next year. And so some of their big guys, guys that put up some significant numbers for them, are finally getting into that Hall of Fame discussion. But they're not necessarily going to know or have figured out what they want to do with those guys yet. It's, you know, how much do you discount for Coors Field? You know, Walker hit, you know, 383 home runs, but, you know, he's got a huge swath of them when he played for the Rockies. You know, how much credit does he get for that? How much do you discount? You know, he hit 313 for his career, but, I mean, you look at those numbers in Colorado, I mean, there's a 363, a 379, yeah, a 350, a 366. You know, that's a lot. And you know, some degree, you know, there are ways to level things out and look at things that don't take into this home field into it. But I don't know. I mean, again, I think that's an interesting decision that the Hall of Fame voters are going to have to make, because there's going to come a time, you know, Nolan Arenado in a few years, maybe. I mean, not a few years. I mean, we're talking a decade or more, probably, because he's still young in his career. But if he keeps up what he's doing, you know, he looks like a Hall of Famer now. If he keeps that up, you know, how, you know, can he still get in, even though he's a Rocky? I mean, I know it's kind of that, to a lesser degree, it's kind of the same argument that we have with steroids and designated hitters and things of that nature.
I thought about when we were talking about it. That's exactly what I was thinking about they kind of get lumped in there together. It's funny. It is. I was looking at Walker stat lines and his OPS plus, because he puts up some monster numbers. And any time he led the league in one category, you know, of any of the times he led the league in anything, it was all homers. He led the league in doubles 94 in Montreal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're just like, it kind of stinks. But I mean, he did just put up some monster numbers.
But, you know, but then again, he's playing his 28 to 36 year, 37 in Colorado. I mean, if he was ever going to put up big numbers, that was the time. I mean, you're right in his prime to do it. Now, again, you know, exactly. How much would he have done, you know, that if he wasn't in Colorado? You know, stuff like that. I don't know. And I think that's very difficult and something that the voters are going to have to discuss. And I think that, you know, with enough sabermetric looks at things, you know, we've kind of seen that over the last couple of years, you know, Tim Raines getting in, stuff like that. If people can start making cases for this and doing so persuasively, you know, players that might not have gotten in the past, because their numbers weren't exactly what people think they should have been, or they got discounted too much for playing in a positive environment, might get another look. And Walker has a chance to be a guy that gets takes advantage of that.
I would hope so.
All right. Well, like you said, we are running late, so let's do two. We got two more here at 34, and that'll be a good place to start. Although these are two that, well, one especially, it's gonna create some discussion. But they're two names: Ken Boyer. The only Cardinal to have his number retired that's not in the Hall of Fame. And Daryl Kyle, who obviously has his number not retired, but reserved, I guess, because of his passing. Let's talk about Boyer first before we get into Kyle, because I'm sure we'll have some talk about that. But Boyer's another guy, I think, kind of like Cepeda, that some of us that weren't around back in the 60s can't really or don't really appreciate like we should.
Oh, I'm completely guilty of that. I mean, some of the names pop up and now I get nervous. guy. Mm-hmm. And I just look on his baseball reference time. MVP, 11-time All-Star, you know what I mean, 5-time you know, and then the Sporting News Player of the Year winner. And I wouldn't have known that. You know what I mean? I've read it, the clippings and stuff, and the Cardinals Press Guide and stuff like that, but I didn't realize it was that good. I feel like I kind of cheat him on here by not knowing.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we've talked about it. We've talked about it this year when we did the greatest Cardinals moments and other things, that we are significantly biased by what we see, actually see with our eyes. You know, watching clips, reading books, all of that gives you a feel for it, but you don't necessarily, unless it's somebody like a Babe Ruth or a, you know, obviously huge star, you don't get a feel for some of those guys like you do when you watch them. I mean, we can talk about, you know, David Eckstein, who's probably somebody we'll talk about in a future show, because we saw him. You know, not that he was a Hall of Famer, not that he was super great, but we can still have a feel for, you know, where he sits in the Cardinal rankings, or what kind of shortstop he was, or, you know, was he overrated, was he underrated, whatever. We have a feel for that. We have some information of that because we watched him play. But we didn't do that with Boyer and some others. And you can be told it, you can understand it kind of with your mind, but you don't necessarily understand it with your heart, I guess.
Yeah, very true. I mean, it's a little frustrating. Like I said, with us going blind, I feel like we probably do the best that we can, but you're right. I mean, it's definitely our era heavy by what we've seen and what we've witnessed and what has had emotional ties with us, you know, as fans. And you know, I look and he's a stud, and it's funny now. Now I want to dig into a little bit more on why he's not a big league Hall of Famer outside of the New Seven is number of retirement cards. You know, so yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, if anybody's listening to this and has stories about Boyer or anybody else, for that matter, you know, feel free to tweet Alan and I, or email us or whatever, and tell us about it. Because, you know, again, we know these things, we can read about these things, but for those that were there, those that saw him play, those that, and again, you know, that's getting kind of far back there now, so I don't want to date too many of our listeners. But, you know, there are some of those that probably remember, if they don't remember seeing him play live, they remember him, it's fresh enough, you know, that they maybe they got told by their dad, you know, that they could still, you know, he was a recent player, even if he wasn't the guy that was there. You know, we're kind of getting to that era. We'll be soon. I'm sure there are some already, but we're getting to that era where there'll be a good number of Cardinal fans that don't remember Albert Pujols. And I mean, obviously Albert's a different case, but they won't remember him as a Cardinal, or they won't remember seeing him play, because they came around later than that. But they'll still, you know, there'll be a lot of people passing that on. So I would definitely do that with Boyer. Now, you know, we get to Daryl Kyle, and we talk about, there's just so many stories about Kyle that we heard, and sadly, it's because of his passing. You know, I imagine, Alan, like I said, you're my age, and so we're looking at, what, 15, it was 15 years of summer since he passed. I imagine you can still remember where you were when you heard all that, and all that, how that went.
Yeah, 100%. And I remember. It was the game of the week,
mm-hmm.
And I remember there was a delay,
mm-hmm.
And didn't hear anything. And that was before. Yes, I mean, we had the networks, and I mean it was only 15 years ago, it wasn't that long ago. But then word started leaking out, and you're just like, oh man, this is kind of bizarre. And then, you know, Girardi gives the speech and everything, and it was just Cardinals seemed to have had some bad luck with that. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the beginning of. Yeah, that was a tearjerker. I mean, it was just, it seems so surreal, because those guys, they still, I mean, I'm 40, and they still seem like superheroes. You know, and I'm, I seem more humanized now, but that was kind of the beginning of like, man, I can't believe, you know, how can an athlete at that level just not wake up? You know, one of those, you know, one of those types of situations. Just very bizarre, and you're exactly right. I mean, I can tell you, you know, I remember my phone blowing up, you know, and all that good stuff right around the time when it started leaking. And I can see Girardi to list today. You know, I can even see Matheny at the time after, you know, the torn up Matheny. And then I remember the Houston clubhouse. I remember Bagwell speaking for everybody and had a hard time doing it. You know, a lot of these memories are kind of rushing back now. But yeah, that's, you know, it kind of overshadows the fact that he was a stud. I thought the, and I hate, I hope I'm, it was an MLB Network special they did, correct?
It was what?
It was the MLB Network that did the special on him.
Oh, yeah, a couple years ago, yeah.
Yeah, which was fantastic. And it really took a lot of different angles that I didn't realize. And more of the family life and stuff like that. Which, you know, he was a great dad and all those numbers. But it was, I was glad to see that angle, but it was still the tragedy overshadowed how great that he was as a Cardinal. And I think that his time in Colorado dampened how good the pitcher he actually was.
Yeah, I mean, you knew he was really good in Houston, but that curveball didn't curve in Colorado. Yeah. But, you know, he still went out there. He still, you know, as we heard so much around the passing, you know, he never missed a start, never went on the disabled list, always did whatever. I mean, you look at the guy and you talk, I mean, you read Rick Enkill's book and you talk, he talks about Daryl Kyle and the mentor that he was. You know, Matt Morris obviously was hugely affected by all this. You know, took Daryl Kyle's jersey with him to the All-Star game of the year, which, ironically, the Cardinals had no representative for, because Morris was the representative and was hurt and couldn't, I mean, was basically replaced on the roster, but, you know, so they didn't have a Cardinal that was active that, and that was also the one that went into a tie. So if he could have played, he would have. That's really roundabout. But anyway, yeah, I remember I knew the game was supposed to come on, and I turned it on, and it was the Red Sox and somebody else playing, and I got on the computer because, like you said, the internet was still, it's kind of new. I was on a bulletin board, a Cardinal bulletin board or something. I think I looked up to make sure that the Cardinal game was supposed to be on, and about that time, you know, they came back to it. And Joe Girardi makes that announcement, and I'll tell you the first thing I thought of, I was like, what are they doing this for Jack Buck for? I mean, you know, because obviously Jack Buck had passed on Tuesday, and they played the next day, but I thought, well, maybe there's some sort of delayed grief here, you know, what's...
Yeah.
And then, you know, just, you know, right after that, Joe Buck, who, I mean, and that's, I mean, Joe Buck had spent that week, you know, burying his father. It's the first time he's on TV since then, and then he has to make that announcement to a nation, you know, basically. For a team that he has these connections with. I mean, obviously he didn't have the connections that he could have, but still. And it just blew me away to hear that. I remember them playing the Cubs the next night on Sunday Night Baseball and obviously not wanting to be there, but had really had no option. I mean, they said, you know, Daryl would have wanted us to play, and so we played. You know, remember that they won 57 games from that point on. Which was his number. It's a season that will burn into you. It's, I think if you ask Tony La Russa, I think he said that's the year, if he could trade a lot of things, he would have won it that year. Won the whole thing. If he probably would, I bet he would trade 06 for 02. Honestly do.
Yeah.
Because that team deserved it, so. Anyway, you know, yeah, it's one of those things that if you were around, you never forget it. And unfortunately, like you said, the Cardinals had some, you know, terrible tragedy. Josh Hancock is in there too. We talked about Oscar Tavares last time. I think we ended with Tavares. We're gonna have to stop ending on our lists on players like this. But it's a tough thing. But we are going to end on that. We have gone well past, I think, our normal time. But we should be back with you next week. That may be our last one for a while. We'll have to see. So hopefully the Cardinals will make all their moves before next Friday. But we make no promises on that. The way this hot stove season has gone, it may be all the way till... I think the Cardinals want to make some moves so they can get some jerseys printed up for people's Christmas presents. But, you know, that can make them some money right there. So, but anyway, we will be back with you next week. And until then, I'm Daniel, and that's Alan. Good night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!